This is a Wisp Politics audio clip. For more, go to wisppolitics.com.
You know, first, always thank you for the time. I guess I wanted to ask, looking ahead to 17, like, what's the Democratic message going to be? Does anything change after the result of this election? Do you still talk about the same issues or just in a different way? Or how's that work?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we certainly got the message that for whatever reason, working class people across the state don't necessarily see their lot with the Democratic Party anymore. That's a huge problem. I mean, so we know that we have to come up with a much crisper, message that resonates more. We need to be out in these areas across the state, hold listening sessions, which we intend to, and to find out amongst the issues that we have heard through polling are important, if that really is what people care about, or if they maybe were, you know, maybe they've got other issues that they think are far more important. I mean, the Democratic Party, there's no question, if people have paid any attention in the state the last 6 years, the Democratic Party is standing up for working class people. But having said that, you know, and I think it does show a little bit. Obviously, the governor's numbers are low. Obviously, people in every poll, it shows that people believe Wisconsin's off in the wrong direction. But on the other end of the spectrum, when they're going to the polling place, the sense we get, and again, it's still early. We're still analyzing the data, but the early data seems to suggest that working class people, you know, certainly bought Trump more so than they bought Hillary, and ironically, bought, in my judgment, bought Ron Johnson more than they bought Russ Feingold. So, as a consequence, you'll be seeing Democratic members spread out across the state far more than you've seen in a long time. You'll be seeing us have listening sessions, and I think that we'll be talking about much more succinctly and we'll be much more focused on talking about those working class issues.
So these listening sessions, are they like a capital effort, or are they like an ADCC effort?
No, more of a capital effort. I mean, we're legislators, and we're not looking to raise money. We're looking to go out and, you know, listen to people and talk to them about the issues that are going on in the state of Wisconsin and alternative ideas that we have that we think would help rebuild the middle class. You know, the data suggests we have the most diminished middle class in the country here in Wisconsin. And clearly the metrics have not been good overall in so many different categories. So we'll talk about our reform ideas and the ideas that we think make a difference, but then we want to hear from them. I mean, does that resonate with you? Are we off track? Are these issues not important to you? Do you have thoughts or ideas that you think you know, are more important for your community and your family to be able to make a living and put food on the table and you know, the, you know, kind of bread and butter issues that, you know, I know people wake up in the morning and have very real legitimate concerns because we know that it's harder and harder for people to make a living.
Are you imagining like individual lawmakers kind of holding these, or are you going to go out like a personal tour where you're going to be at every one of them, or how's it?
No, it'd be we're going to involve very broadly members of our caucus. A lot of them are very eager to do this. They've indicated an interest, and you know, some have already started. They'll be broad based and, you know, to collect input and to share our ideas for rebuilding the middle class and make their life better here in Wisconsin. We think they deserve better than what they're getting here in Wisconsin, frankly.
The governor's been doing these listening sessions that are kind of close, you know, invitation only. Will it be like that, or are you just going to have
exactly the opposite? You know, the governor doesn't have listening tours. The governor has, you know, campaign events with his supporters that he limits. He tells you who can come, who can't come, how much time they, you know, who can even speak. And they're very restrictive. I don't think they're listening tours. They're unlike, I think, what we've seen in the past by governors or state officials. And, you know, ours will be much more open to the public and probably you know, broadly advertise. We'll put in the, you know, in the media, and you know, I'll let people know in advance so they have plenty of time to come. Put on social media, reach out to people far and wide. So,
so they've already started. Has anybody done one yet?
I think, you know, I think that people are starting to do them in their home communities, you know, versus, you know, going out to other corners of the state. So,
and so, when do you hope to start these then?
Well, early next year. I mean, we don't have definitive times. Like the opening bell starts January 1st necessarily, but obviously early in the year. I mean, we've already had, you know, numerous extensive caucuses discussing this and discussing, you know, how we can be much stronger at outreach. And so...
Because it's interesting to say that one of the takeaways when I was talking to people after November 8th was that the criticism that Democrats in the two caucuses have become too focused on Madison and Milwaukee issues, that they're in tune with those, but they're not communicating to blue-collar white voters out in Chippewa Falls or Wausau, and that they don't get out of Madison or Milwaukee enough to go hear, you know, the other side. Is that part of this? Do you think people need to get out of, like, the, I don't say the bubble, but this environment and go up to Wausau?
I think there's a perception that's true, that, you know, that we're more focused on Madison and Milwaukee. That is not the case. If you look at, you know, our first 15 bills last year, 15 for 15, were all about economic development. They weren't focused on Madison or Milwaukee. But perception can be as important as reality. And secondly, I would say that, you know, we have had listening tours around the state, but we can do better. There's no question about it. They can be better organized, better planned, more extensive, and that's what we intend to do.
I mean, I don't mean to pick on this one bill, but the one that comes up in those conversations is a couple of your members proposed a bill to ban handguns, for example. And the knock is that they get the idea, the rationale behind it. But if you go up to Chippewa Falls and pitch that bill, it's not going to go very far because that's not the, they're not open to that message. Do you think the caucus sometimes gets off on a legislation that isn't helpful in those places where you need to do better to succeed?
Well, I think that, you know, you're always going to have individual lawmakers that, you know, are responding sometimes to their own individual constituency or to situations that have occurred. And, you know, we can't dictate what bills people might put forward. And that happens on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I can cite a lot of bills that have come up on both sides of the aisle. So I think that's different than bills that have broad-based Democratic support. And, you know, perhaps we can communicate that more directly in terms of here's the core of the bills that we're putting forward that have, you know, broad-based support amongst, you know, all the members of our caucus, for instance, or, you know, or amongst, you know, what we've heard back. They, you know, our ideas are a reflection of what we're hearing from people. So, you know, we just came off a long campaign trail. I was all over the state, so were many other members of my caucus, and you know, we heard things, and we try to reflect what their values are, what they are reciting back to us. I mean, obviously, you look at polls, but you also listen to people directly, one-on-one, door-to-door, and town hall to town hall. But clearly, I think the communication needs to be much stronger than it has been, much more focused.
One thing to ask you about, kind of in the same vein as messages, you haven't announced your finance members yet. Are you looking for them to be messengers for the caucus, whoever you pick, to be kind of the ones who go on finance and do essentially deliver the message you're talking about now? Is that part of the criteria for those picks?
No, I would say this. I mean, look, we're looking to involve a broad swath of our caucus. I mean, finance members that we had last time did a very nice job. They, you know, they certainly went out around the state. But you can't just depend on two people. I mean, you know, this is a caucus-wide effort. In fact, you know, we've had extensive meetings in our leadership team. We are looking to expand our leadership team to try to involve more people.
When you say by expand leadership, obviously there's the traditional, like, minority leader, assistant, caucus chair. Are you talking about more spots like that or, like, within the caucus, like, titles. What do you mean by expanded leadership?
Yeah, program? Well, we're still analyzing that, but just to try and involve a broader swath of the caucus in, in leadership types of roles. I mean, obviously, you have certain elected leaders, the four you mentioned. I guess you can add in our expanded leadership team. It includes our caucus secretary and sergeant-at-arms, and we're going to involve them more fully than we had in the past. But we're looking to have a more expansive approach to that, to try and get broader buy-in from our caucus, to try and involve more people and things of that sort.
Because I remember after the 12 election, when you guys tried a different system that I think Rob Call and somebody else kind of helped out with fundraising, and you had to divide up some of the ADC's responsibilities. Is that part of it too?
Well, I mean, the ADCC, I mean, we're talking today about what we're doing as part of our official responsibilities.
I mean,
I'm happy to talk. If you want to talk about ADCC, I mean, in the past we had co-chairs of the ADCC, and we've had regional coordinators of the ADCC, and we certainly will continue to the degree to which members are willing to step forward that kind of an operation. That certainly works well, and we've had broader participation than we've ever had before, frankly, which is good. I
mean, okay.
And
I separate leadership stuff with the caucus in the building. That's going to have some kind of new roles or
just the more we're going to try to involve more people, and come up with some new roles for certain members.
And then in the ADCC, any changes after this fall that you anticipate?
Well, we did not have co-chairs last time.
Okay.
Because nobody stepped forward and was willing to take on that responsibility. But we did have regional coordinators. And this time we haven't gotten that far along yet in terms of the actual structure, but we are looking to ask people to step up, and we'll be having meetings right away in January on that structure as well.
And so the co-chairs, what would their job be? I mean, obviously, ultimately, all falls on you, the fundraising, the everything else. But what would the co-chair role be for ADCC then if they come up, they step up?
Well, back, the cycle before last, Steve Doyle and Chris Taylor were co-chairs. Mm-hmm. And they did a nice job of involving a broader swath of the caucus and assuming some of the leadership responsibilities. So it didn't just fall on elected leaders like myself or the assistant leader and others, that they could go out and speak on behalf of the ADCC and reach out broad and wide, and that was very helpful. Member engagement, I think, is very important. And we saw in this election cycle, unfortunately, the Trump wave didn't show the kind of results we hoped for, but we did get broader participation than we had in a while. So we're hoping we can build on this.
Well, building on that, when you look at ADCC, I follow fundraiser reports. You guys raised more money this cycle than you have the last several.
Ever. Part of that's the never, new, I'm quite sure.
The new rules help with that. What did you guys do well this time versus before, and what do you need to improve upon for 18?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in terms of fundraising, that one did go extremely well. We have, more people involved. We were more strategic about it, worked more aggressively. One of the things that we're talking about is better coordinating our efforts with the SSDC and with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, as well as other allied groups. But I think you're going to see much more coordination than you've ever seen before in terms of, between the two caucuses and with the DPW. Yeah. We've already had talks underway in order to do that. So that brings greater efficiencies. It brings... I think it will build more confidence. I think it will save resources and field kinds of operations and hopefully have a more coherent message as well.
Because you keep taking it into the next question I had, Peter. Because one thing, after the election results, people aren't happy on your caucus about what happened. I mean, you guys lost a seat.
Right.
But in my calls, what kind of came through was nobody's done the work that you have in terms of raising money for others, doing the doors. The things that you and I, as people have been around for a long time, know that people want to be leadership typically do.
Right.
Do you think your caucus needs to better buy in to the team effort of, you can't just be in a safe seat and that's it. You have to go out and help and target. Do you think you need better buy in from your caucus on those things, the efforts that you do?
Well, I mean, look, let me say this. I mean, first of all, we had more buy in than we've had in past cycles. But we do certainly have a number of members that are not engaged. Now, you know, any organization, you always have certain people that do more than others. I mean, whether it's the Rotary Club or the, you know, or the, you know, Foundation Board, UW Parkside Foundation Board that I serve on. And, you know, it's just a natural thing that happens. But, you know, there is that concept that a team's only as strong as its weakest member. And, you know, so we want to make sure that we get to the fullest degree that we can every member participating, and to some degree, and try to make sure that maybe people that are sort of in the low end of their participation step it up a little bit. But I have to say, there were certainly, you know, a dozen to, you know, more than, well, more than a dozen members that did do more than they probably have ever done before.
We've been...
And that's all, you know, that's how you hit fundraising targets. That's how you hit, you know, but you know, of course, it'll start in January with recruitment. I mean, the most important thing is recruiting strong candidates that, you know, that are willing to do the work themselves. I mean, because you...
Yeah, we've been trying to, going through the reports and averaging up, if you take, like, the rank and file Democratic member, you know, and looking at 16 versus 14, we've noticed an uptick in the average. I mean, take you out of the equation because you're minor,
right,
but the average rank and file person, they seem to be raising more money now than they were the past cycle,
right,
from what we can tell, and donating more to ADCC or the party or other members than what they did the last cycle. We have noticed that. We're still trying to work on those numbers. Was that an emphasis for you going into 16 to try and get more buy-in on those?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, we broadened the base of participation in terms of the meetings that we held and the organizational structure. And I think that helped to some degree. Now, you know, obviously, you know, you know, when seats feel terrible, and especially to lose one like Christina, who is a tremendous member, but of course there have been stories written from the Wall Street Journal to state papers about Arcadia and that region and how much it changed.
Yeah.
And Trump had a message that clearly resonated extremely strongly there. Christina ran, I think, 12 points above the top of the ticket. In almost any year, that gets secured you a victory. And so this year, unfortunately, though, the top of the ticket was I don't know, roughly 20 points behind. So that's just too much to overcome.
Yeah.
So I don't think Christina, I mean, clearly I'm sure if you talk to him, he'd probably dissect it better than I ever could, but he certainly was not caught sleeping. He worked hard. He ran an aggressive campaign, and I think the Republicans, those that would be candid, would tell you they were surprised he lost.
Yeah. Last two things I want to ask you about. Every time the list of gubernatorial candidates comes up, your name is on the list. Obviously it's because you're a minority leader. You're one of the top elected officials in the legislature, but are you thinking about running for governor in 18? Has it crossed your mind?
No, look, I'm very focused at what I do here, and you need to be. It's a lot of work to, you know, head a caucus, and especially with, you know, so many hurdles you have to overcome. I mean, you know, obviously we're very buoyed by the federal court decision on redistricting. Mm-hmm. That could change everything in Wisconsin overnight if that decision sticks. I'd rather have our hand that's been dealt than their hand when you have a 2-1 decision. I don't know if the Supreme Court, even if they want to ask the Supreme Court to take it up, I don't know if they will take it up. And if they do take it up, the Reagan appointee that wrote the decision was very clear that it met sort of the Justice Kennedy test. So we're optimistic that Justice Kennedy, you know, would be more likely to rule in our favor than not be, you know, than the other way around. So, you know, so we just have a ton of work to do, and we've been working hard ever since the election. We have not slowed down one iota because we've had just a lot of soul-searching meetings, a lot of discussions, trying to aim for consensus, aiming for outside groups to try and work more closely with them to, you know, and put together a process where we can get out across the state in a much more aggressive manner. And so we're... You know, I'm very focused on that.
So does that mean no, you're not thinking about running for governor? Or
I have no plans to run for governor.
Okay.
You know, and there are plenty of other candidates that are out there already talking to people and trying to line up resources. So, I mean, you never say never, I guess, but I have no plans. I have no committee. I am totally focused on what I'm doing.
And with the redistricting suit, I mean, is that just give you guys a ray of hope or about trying to kind of rebuild the caucus a bit? The idea that they could have new lines at 18, is that maybe your best bet?
Well, it certainly is an important, I mean, it's as important as anything else. I mean, clearly the plaintiffs made the point that we have the most partisan redistricting plan in the entire country. I mean, I think the efficiency gap is nearly double what the federal court said would be acceptable. So, I mean, if I drew the lines, I can assure you we'd have more than 60 seats ourselves. Now, my druthers is that I don't draw the lines. I mean, I think you should have, I'm totally bought into the Iowa type of model. Because I living through this now and seeing how polarizing it is for a state as a whole and seeing how you disenfranchise so many people, I think is outrageous. But clearly, if we get fair maps, if the courts draw the maps, I think it's a whole new ballgame here in Wisconsin.
And lastly, how do you guys go about rebuilding the Democratic bench? I mean, you said there are a bunch of people who are looking to run for governor, but mm-hmm. when I've gone through the list of those names, nobody said, aha, that is the person who's the obvious candidate waiting. Mm-hmm. And there's talk about the Democratic bench in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. How do you go about rebuilding it? Like, what needs to be done? Is there some missing?
Well, I think we are building it. I mean, first of all, I think that I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have a wide field in a primary. I think it engages people. When I ran and became a member of Congress, I wouldn't have won if I wasn't in a primary. Mm-hmm. As a primary, I emerged with a huge majority. People thought I had already won the race. I mean, I got tons of publicity during that period, and my opponent at that time didn't have a primary. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad indication. In fact, to me, it shows that you've got a lot of people that think that they've got the vision, the ideas to be the next governor. And there's, a lot of strong candidates out there. And, so somebody may emerge in the next year as they go out there and campaign. Somebody might catch fire or maybe get to maybe it takes the primary election to pick the winner, and maybe somebody in that process ends up winning by a good margin and would be very competitive. But, of course, if I were Governor Walker, I'd be very nervous right now. When your poll numbers, are as low as his are, that shows you that and when people feel the state's in the wrong direction, that should tell the governor that he's got some tough sledding ahead. Yeah. And his budget, I don't think, is going to win him a lot of support. Right. Just more of the same.
Right. Thank you, Peter.